Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Welcome back for our final segment. Before we introduce our next guest, just want to, as always, give a thumbs up to our sponsors, the fine folks who make Monday Night Talk possible, Tiny & Sons Glass, Life Care Center of the South Shore, East Coast Printing, Accentria, and McGuigan's Pub. Just a quick note, McGuigan's Pub, their 5K run that benefits local charities coming up on Sunday, June 5th. If you're somebody who likes to get involved with road races, you'll definitely like this year's road race. Usually after, there's a post-race party at McGuigan's. You want to find out more information, go to www.mcguigan'spub.com.
And now we have my favorite segment, one of my favorite segments.
It's a segment that Joe actually talks during.
Thanks. And on the phone now, we have the Junior D'Amato.
Junior. Hey, what's going on, guys?
How goes the battle, Junior?
It's absolutely phenomenal. The sun is shining. I'm looking out over the water right here, and the sun is just going down. It's probably around 60 degrees, and first time in a week we have no rain, which is a good thing.
I gotta tell you, during the weekend, I wanted to take my new tractor up, but I couldn't because every time I'd open the garage door, it started raining.
Well, congratulations on your new purchase. I'm excited for you.
One of my first questions, because I know other than a guy who is automotive, over the years when you and I have talked to you, you're a guy who's well-versed in small engines, whether it's, you know, a tractor or, you know, a boat motor. Some of the guys at the place that I purchased my lawn tractor cautioned me that I should steer clear of any fuels or gasoline that has too much ethanol, and that I should use this other stuff that came in a can. It was like a gallon can.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. Anytime you pull up to a gas pump here in New England, you're going to get approximately 10% ethanol.
Yikes.
It's about that. Yeah, well, yikes. You know, yikes it might be, and it is what it is. Take it or leave it. That's pretty much your choice, okay, at the gas pump. Some of the marine gas pumps do not have any kind of treatment in their gas, and they're just unleaded, which is even better. Now, you're talking about True Fuel. That's one of the brand names that you can buy. Usually it comes in a quart container, sometimes a gallon container. A quart of this True Fuel, whether it's 50-to-1 mix, 40-to-1 mix for the two cycles or two-stroke, or the full, you know, non-mixed, non-oil mixed True Fuel, it's anywhere from $3 to $4.50 or $5 for a 32-ounce container.
Mm.
Now, I've got a weed whacker. I've got one of those blow things to blow the stuff off the, you know, little, what do they call those things? You start them up, a gas blower, I guess you call it. I've got one that you strap to your back. It's a pretty good size one, and the other one you just crank up and you you just blow in the driveway with your hand. On those particular two-stroke motor-driven blowers, leaf blowers, I guess you call them, I use only that True Fuel product. Yeah, it might be more money. In fact, it is more money.
Mm.
But you know what the upside is? Three-year shelf life versus 30 days in most cases before gasoline starts to go stale. It has 92 octane, which is a biggie. Here we go. We have high octane fuel for our little leaf blowers and, yes, our lawnmowers. What does high octane fuel do? And I've been taken to task many times with the newspaper column we write talking about this. And you know what? What I find works. It's nothing scientific. It's just the facts. Premium gasoline, that's the higher the octane, it has a different burn point. It burns hotter and cleaner. And, yes, it will give you a little better fuel economy. The flash point, you need more heat and more spark to light off. premium unleaded fuel. And, of course, engine compression, which all our little lawnmowers, snowblowers, and all that stuff, they have. On another note, what I've used in the past has been aviation fuel, which is about 110 octane, which you have to go to the airport and you have to get it in cans.
Wow.
You know, 5-gallon cans. Well, what are you going to do with this, you know, Sonny? Well, I've got a little airplane at home that we're just rebuilding and trying to get up and running. It's one of them, you know, you put together ones. Oh, okay, we can give you the gas. Because it's illegal to put that into an automobile that's used for street-driven purposes because it doesn't have any of the emission requirements in this fuel, even though it is unleaded. But and that's about regular gas now is $2 a gallon. That's probably about $4 a change a gallon.
What's the difference between using this the stuff that you're talking about and using a 91 or a 92 octane? Well, is it a matter of longevity for the engine?
A lot of times what happens is the higher octane fuels certainly are much superior than the regular octane fuels. Using fuels that don't have any kind of, you know, ethanol to speak of in them, sure, that's a much better fuel for the engines. But what your lawnmower person failed to tell you is that the gas lines and the engines are designed to run on various types of fuel, the most common available at the pump. Oh. Out in the Midwest, you've got all kinds of crazy mixes with the corn and all that stuff in the gasoline. And, yeah, that can really be detrimental to the fuel systems. The old days, if you had an older lawnmower, say 10 years old, it would act, the gas we have today would actually eat out and eat away the rubber seals in, like, the carburetor and the float bowl, where today's engines, the rubber seals are treated for and designed for the ethanol, a little bit of ethanol that we have in the fuel.
All right. Joe?
Junior, let's talk about some of the cars that you have tested recently.
Well, we've had a bunch of different stuff. Today I drove home a Subaru with a continual variable transmission. Absolutely phenomenal. These cars have gotten so much better over the year. The Subaru isn't the tin can that it used to be of recent years. I have a three-cylinder, count them, Joe, three-cylinder Ford Focus this past week, which I just gave back, with a turbo, heated seats, and, thank goodness, a heated steering wheel.
And what'd you think of that?
And a Ford Focus for 22 large.
Now, Larry, our gentleman who is the midday host, Larry Nelson, actually has a Subaru that he bought, I want to say, in the past 6 months. Larry, didn't you just recently buy a Subaru? What did you buy?
But the Subaru, 2015 Subaru Outback.
That's a big,
yeah.
That's a very large car compared to what it used to be. And again, the only thing I think lacking in the Subaru line now is the heated steering wheel.
Yeah, it doesn't have heated steering wheels. I was kind of shocked by that.
And it has heated cloth seats, and they were one of the first ones to have that, which is good.
Yeah, those are good.
The other car we had a few weeks back was a 2016 Nissan Altima. Sticker price was, I remember it, was a pre-production vehicle, and it, of course, was loaded because it was a thing it was a vehicle they put all their bells and whistles into. And again, a heated steering wheel. And people might be listening, who needs a heated steering wheel? Well, here in New England, it's like having heated seats. And more importantly, how many people have purchased a car with air conditioning, and now they're going out to get another car, and if it didn't have air conditioning, they wouldn't buy it.
True.
It's not like having a power seat. It's like, wow, a heated seat, a heated steering wheel, it's unbelievable in the wintertime. It really is, no matter how you cut it. And a lot of these cars now have, for the first 3 inches of the windshield, they have these copper lines going through them that actually heats the bottom of the windshield electronically to melt the snow off the wiper blades. And it's another big deal.
Now, I also know that you had talked about, as far as vehicles, you said something about testing a Jeep.
Yeah, we had the Italian Jeep Renegade. Basically, it's a fix-it-again, Tony type deal. And again, the little Jeep, it was a smaller four-cylinder version. That's not a real Jeep, but you know what? It is a real Jeep, and a bunch of people at the health club I go to They had bought them after I had let them take it for a ride.
Now, word on the street is that those are actually trail rated. Is that
yes,
true?
Yes, they are. And the one we had was it did say trail rated on it. And again, it's a easy to get into vehicle. It's pretty comfortable. It's got a fair amount of power, and it's got a variety of different four-wheel drive selections when you turn the little knob that's on the console. It's electronic. And everything about the thing does work well. I mean, there is no question that it works well. And a lot of the vehicles today, we're not seeing big problems with these vehicles. You know, the good thing I have, I wrote a little column about 3 weeks ago, and I said, you know, I really love my job. How many people get to drive a new car every week, play with them, enjoy them, and if a neighbor wants to try one out, they're very interested in the vehicle, let them take it for a Banaka blast and see if they really do like it. And 90% of the time, they will end up purchasing the car that they took out of my driveway. And the reason why they, not that particular car, but that model, the reason why they, I think, do that is they feel like, I can go do this, I can bring it home, throw the wife, the kids, and the dog in the car, and not have to worry about some salesman, you know, breathing down my neck. Mm. And I tell you, it's pretty amazing.
You talk about some of the new things that come with cars. Air conditioning used to be the big thing. Heated steering wheels. Now you have vehicles out there that will back you into a spot, that will stop on a dime, that have cameras in the bumpers. What's some of the things that you're seeing more and more these days?
That's a very big deal. Well, let's talk real quickly about this Ford Focus. A 1-liter three-cylinder engine that has almost as much power as a V6 did a year or so ago. We have V6s now that have the power of V8s. We have cars that, you know, virtually, with a little bit of help, can park themselves. And now we're going to get into the driverless vehicles that work off road sensors, which I got to sit in a car, must have been 8 or 10 years ago. It was a Ford Escape or whatever the heck it might have been. And I got to tell you, we went around the track down in Michigan. I was pretty scared. You know, okay, here you are, a little passenger, and you weren't on a unirail like you are at Disney. You're actually going around a track. And the way they were controlling the vehicle was from the light poles that had, you know, radar and sonar sensors in them. Kind of like the same stuff they have down at Disney now. I mean, it's pretty crazy. And We're going to see more and more of that. Now, the big problem is, who's going to fix these cars when they break, after they go off warranty? You can, I think, go into a car loan now. If I'm not mistaken, I think it's going on 7 years now for a new car loan.
Yeah.
And the warranties now are going crazy and stupid. Yep. A lot of the car companies, you know, have these long warranties, and the car dealers are doubling the warranties.
Hmm. Well, that's how they're getting people into their showrooms, right? Is enticing them with, hey, if something goes wrong within 10 years or 100,000 miles, we'll take care of it for you.
Only so many people are going to buy new cars and keep them for 10 years. And if you have to look at it this way, if you watch television and even some of the commercials or look at the newspaper, when you read the ad or listen to the ad, how often do you say you can buy this car for X amount of dollars? It's lease this car.
Yep.
It's all about leasing. That way they get the car back into the dealership within a 3-year period, a 26-month period. And 3/4 of the way through the lease, you'll get a phone call from the dealer, say, look, would you like to get out of that car and into another car? We're going to absorb the lease payments and any penalties and get you into another new car right away. That's a great, great idea, and it's a great thing for them to do. And it's good for the consumer that's leasing the car, or basically just renting a car. So that's actually what leasing is. It's like leasing or renting an apartment. You don't own anything. You're paying through the nose for everything. And at the end of the lease, bye-bye. And, you know, if that's what you like, worry-free driving for 2 or 3 years, then so be it. There's nothing wrong with it.
Junior, you know, it's I know we all know that the market right now for vehicles is really good. This is one of the best vehicle markets that we've seen in a very long time. But, you know, is it just me, or are there dealerships popping up literally everywhere, or have you seen the same thing?
Great question. The dealership, let's talk about some of the dealerships like you have down in the Cape, You have here in the North Shore. In Hanover now, you have a McLaren dealer just opened up, a Dover of Chambers dealership. Used to be a Saab dealership, then it was with Lexus, and now it's bigger. When a car dealer, you know, the owner, proprietor, decides to spend $3, $4, $5 million on a dealership, a lot of people don't realize how much money is in the back end from the car company. There's millions of dollars involved. You go to Route 1 in Norwood, you look at what Prime is doing, they're putting Audi, Porsche, and Acura in three different locations right on the same footprint.
Wow.
And that's probably a good $35 million project. $35 million. You look down the Cape and you look at how many new dealerships have popped up. And again, each car dealership is a minimum of about $8 million to open before you can put the key in the door.
So is that you're saying because that the car companies, this is really something that they'll come in and say, hey, you know, this is going to be a great market for you, so we're going to come in with some money to help
we're
you open
help
this thing?
We're going to help you, but you've got to prove yourself, number one. Mm. And if you don't prove yourself, well, guess what?
It's gone.
We just pull the blanket out from underneath your feet. And you'll also find now that car companies, the car dealerships, on a lot of cases, are working very close to move that number. In some cases, believe it or not, at the end of the month, they'll lose money to sell Kevin Tachi a vehicle because they get that extra money back that they lost from the manufacturer for meeting a quota. It happens. I mean, same thing when I sold Shell gasoline. I was selling gas 7 cents a gallon less than I was paying for it.
Oof.
Once I hit my plateau, I get an extra 20 cents.
Oh, wow.
So that was a big deal. You're talking 20 cents on a gallon of gas.
Yeah.
That is a lot of money. And that's the way it goes. I mean, it is what it is.
You are listening to Junior D'Amato on Monday Night Talk on WATD. Kevin, do you have a question?
Yeah, I actually want to take it in the direction of power plants. That is, what are we seeing for changes for engines? You know, are they getting smaller? And what are you hearing from the industry?
That's great. Great question. We're seeing smaller engines making more horsepower, more torque. Like I just talked about my little three-cylinder Ford Focus. I got about 39 to 40 miles per gallon. It had more than enough power to do what needs to be done, and it worked. Now, we talk about Toyota coming across with a three-quarter 0.75 liter engine that's used right now overseas. In Japan, that may be coming here to the United States.
Really?
Yeah. And again, you can take and put a turbo on these things, and these things work really, really well.
What's changing though? Is it the bore? Is it the size of the piston? Is it the crank? What are they doing differently with these engines?
Fuel management.
Okay.
Direct fuel injection, variable timing, camshafts that really change the power difference. In the old days in a race car, if you wanted to get a little bit more top end, you'd put a little offset in the camshaft.
Sure.
And, you know, you would retard the camshaft timing, basically.
The throw's a little different, right.
Yeah. And now what happens now is these things do it automatically by electronics.
Wow.
You have no idea what we're going up against and where we're going. The new Ford GT40 is coming out with a twin-turbo six-cylinder that's going to have more power than the 5.4-liter blown V8 that it had just a couple of years ago.
Wow.
You have Corvettes that are making, you know, 600 horsepower. The Hellcat, 700 horsepower. And these cars get 20-plus miles per gallon. And they idle and they do everything fine. You have cylinder deactivation. That's where Cadillac tried that with GM many, many years ago, and
right.
It just was an absolute, you know, big mistake. But right now, cylinder deactivation works perfectly. It's all electronic. The cars go from a V8 to a V4 or a V6, whatever the number might be, and it's done pretty effortlessly. And as soon as you touch the accelerator, you can't even feel it kick in and out. This car I'm driving now that I just gave back today, three-cylinder Ford, come down to a set of lights, the engine shuts off.
Yikes.
Wow. Oh, that's the way they are. Yeah, and then you just take your, as soon as you take your foot off the brake, engine starts right back up again. Automatic stop-start.
That's
very
how,
common, very, very popular.
That's an old race car trick.
Yeah, well, you know, you, these things, that it works. I mean, you're seeing more and more of this stuff. And the one drawback with this direct fuel injection is the valves are starting to get carbon deposited on the backside of the intake valves. And BMW has been a real, real problematic engine with this kind of a situation. GM has not been, and Ford has not been so much of a problem, but it seems like the import cars with the higher compression are having some serious issues with carbon buildup.
Well, let's go from talking gas to talking electric cars. You and I remember a couple of years ago, we were talking about the onset of electric cars, and you know the Leafs and the different ones that were out there being tested. How far in your experience?
That's great too. You know, we've been doing this a long time,
yep.
And a couple of years back, they gave me a Leaf to drive.
Yep.
I says, great. He had like a 75-mile or whatever the range was, 100-mile range.
It was 100 miles, yep.
And I said, oh, great, I may be able to take it to Hyde Park. And the guy says, I don't think so. So I left my house here on Lakeville with about a 90% charge. 6 miles down the road, I was down to a 70% charge.
Wow.
The problem with all of those earlier electric cars is that they had no distance at all. Tesla has come out with a new battery innovation, and now they're claiming that they're going to have a 200-mile car in a very short period of time. And we're going to see more and more of that with the electric cars. They had a Tesla in the Midwest or in California, Florida, wherever it was, and it raced a Hellcat.
Mm.
And the Tesla beat the Hellcat in a quarter mile.
Mm.
It's an extremely fast vehicle. It just goes faster than the Energizer Bunny does on television, and they work. Now, Tesla is coming out with their new vehicle, which will be available sometime next spring if they can keep up with the market, and it's going to be a $30,000 car, and it's going to have a 200-mile-plus range.
Any of it from any regeneration as far as, like, from braking and stuff, have they figured out how to capture that and be able to use it to recharge the batteries, or is that something?
Regen has been around since they started these vehicles, and if you look at what's out there now, the hybrid vehicles are much more favorable for a hybrid or a electric car that has a vehicle extender. That's a little engine that would just be used to charge the batteries up. Prius is basically the coupe de grace when it comes to hybrid vehicles or, you know, semi-electric vehicles, because they've got it down pat. The new ones now, they work really well, and they've got plenty of power, and they're fun to drive. They've got different modes for driving, sport, economy, and performance, and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, they're really coming a long way. And battery technology is the biggie. That's what's going on. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but Tesla now has little battery packs that you put in your house.
Hmm.
This is a big deal for a lot of listeners. If you're afraid of the lights going out, you don't want to have a generator, you buy a Tesla power pack for $6,500. You hang it on the wall, and it would give you a few hours of moderate electricity use.
Hmm.
You know, you wouldn't want to have your 220 air conditioner on, or maybe use your 220 stove oven for a couple of hours. But, you know, for the TV lights and crap like that, it works really, really well. And that's by Tesla. And now here we are in the middle of a hot summer, and you've got your air conditioning cranking. The kids got all the crap going. The whirlpool might be going. The swimming pool might be going. That's when you throw the switch for your Tesla backup battery pack to engage. That will actually work, and it will take, you know, a lot of the grunt off that big bill. And now 11 o'clock, time to go night-night, everybody kiss and go to bed. The Tesla battery pack then starts to recharge itself.
My goodness, how the world has changed and how the time has flown, my friend. We're basically out of time. Anything you want to say in closing?
Well, I think people need to really be careful and be diligent about what they're going to do. And if you're thinking about solar power for your roof of your house, that's come down a long way in money. And a lot of that stuff does work. You just have to make sure that the roof that you're going to put this thing on, these panels, work really well. You know, a lot of people in my neighborhood have them, and they do seem to be a pretty darn good investment.
How is Miss Carla and the kiddies doing?
I picked the cat up for the vet today. His eye is back to normal, and he's okay. He was away for a week. He decided to put his little paw in his eye, and he actually put a little hole in it. Yeah, so he's really fine now, and the Hellcat's running really well, and people are on the lake, and we just have to start to think a good summer.
Junior, we'll definitely have to have you back in the next 5 to 6 weeks to talk about the summertime and taking care of your vehicles.
You're ready to roll, so are we. And you guys have a great afternoon, great evening. And to our listeners, thank you for listening.
You got it. There he is. The great Junior D'Amato, our guest for that segment. Joe, you want to say anything before we say goodbye for the evening?
That was great. Good show. You're a great host.
And if you've missed any of the segments that we've had this evening, we do our best to make sure that we put them up as a podcast. You just have to go to the WATD website, 959WATD.com. Look for Monday Night Talk. You scroll down, you click right on it, and you'll be able to find all of our podcasts. And I also invite you to kind of scroll through. Over the past 4 or 5 years, we've put nearly every podcast up. So you can, if there's a particular one that you remembered hearing and you want to hear, it's still up. We don't just take them down after 6 months. We leave them up so folks, if they want to hear them, they can hear, you know, former elected officials or forums that we've had. I know there's a couple of forums that Joe has liked over the years that we still have up on the podcast.
Yes.
Want to check them out. And we're going to be doing more forums coming up. So that's it for Monday Night Talk. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., have yourself a great evening.
Good night.
Bye.
Bye.